So while we look for Matt, we got Blockbuster Blake joining us on 720. Blake Stubbs, how you doing, man?
Hey, how have you guys been?
Oh,
I've been at the movies all evening, so getting ready for tonight.
Yeah, doing your research. So, Blake, we're going to talk about the new movies coming up, but I want to tee up and start getting some texts and phone calls. 312-981-7200. Join this conversation, because it's a fascinating one. Certainly one that's fun, because, you know, Halloween... Are you okay there, Roger?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
Are you sneezing into the microphone? You know, there's an off button on that thing, Roger. Anyways,
yeah, someday I'll find it.
I don't know. No indication of it yet.
No.
Movies that really just make your give you goosebumps, make your hair the heebie-jeebies, as you said earlier, Roger. 312-981-7200 as we get to Halloween. Because Blake, there is something about the crispness in the air, the Halloween spirit that does make you kind of want to, I don't know, get on the couch and be frightened by a movie, right?
There is. I think part of it, you know, for me, has to do with the fact that this is allergy season for me, so I don't want to be outside doing anything else. I'd rather sit at home, close up a place, ride out what I can of that air conditioning, I guess, up until it gets too cold. But, no, I mean, this is also, you know, prime programming time on television for a lot of, you know, Halloween-oriented programming, or at least, I guess we could call it, like, fall transition programming.
Right.
Because that's essentially what it is. I mean, they're going to bust out all the hits. You know, I mean, I know we're probably going to get a lot of text about it. You're probably going to get three of them from me, but Hocus Pocus is going to be mentioned multiple times.
It certainly is.
While I'm with you tonight.
Not necessarily a scary movie, but that's just kind of a feel-good, fun one.
Certainly a festive movie for this time of year. And another one like it for me growing up, because and you'll hear me say this again around Christmas time, but, you know, Peanuts. It's a great pumpkin, Charlie Brown. Yeah, it has a special. And I'll mention, you know, Charlie Brown Christmas special. But there's a lot of the feel-good stuff. If you're not really into the scary type of, you know, films or shows that are, you know, rolled out around this time of year, there's always a lot of programming that you can turn on that are, you know, family-friendly. But also, you know, just enjoyable. It doesn't have to be a thriller, chiller, you know, got to sit there and, you know, have goosebumps. You can just kind of kick back and enjoy it and take in the seasonal change.
Absolutely.
Because that's the big thing about this holiday, is that it really is ushering in a complete and utter, you know, seasonal change.
Right. All right, Blake, we'll get those texts in, 312-981-7200, movies you love to watch around the Halloween time. But let's talk about some of the new releases that are out. And, man, there's a lot of buzz around A Star Is Born. And for the most part, I've read mostly positive reviews. I did read one negative review. Well, you can talk about that. But, Blake, overall, your thoughts?
Well, A Star Is Born. So both of the movies that I saw tonight were actually shot by the same cinematographer. His name is Matthew Libatique, and he's an Oscar-nominated cinematographer. And I'm going to, and this ushers in sort of my review of A Star Is Born. I thought this was a beautifully shot film. Which is probably not the big reason a lot of people are rushing out to see it.
Right.
But it has a lot of great concert photography. In fact, it's very intimate concert photography.
What do you mean by concert photography?
So, Bradley Cooper's character, this is written, co-written by Bradley Cooper, directed by Bradley Cooper, and starring Bradley Cooper, and also Lady Gaga, which I'm sure everyone is well aware based on the marketing campaign for the film. But it's about an up-and-coming songstress who, you know, sort of befriends this rock living legend whose career is kind of dying out. And they sort of have this simpatico nature about their relationship, and it blossoms into something very special. And a lot of that takes place on the stage in front of live crowds, through music. And so this film, you know, you're seeing behind the curtain, you're seeing what their lives are like, and, you know, the demons that they battle and the obstacles they're overcoming personally, specifically for Gaga's character, but also Cooper's character. You keep getting layers peeled back and exploring more about him. And also when they go on tour or when they're performing live, you feel like you're there, but it's like you get the best seat in the house, because the camera doesn't really rely on a lot of heavy crowd shots or wide shots. It's all, you're on the stage. It's like you have a very first person point of view of what it would be like to be up close and feel live performance. And I felt like this movie captured and you know, as someone who's done some live performance, not as a singer, but on stage as an actor, it took me there. And I really connected with a lot of the performances, and specifically, you know, this movie's going to pull, I think, quite a few Oscar nominations. I was kind of like making the list as I was walking out of the theater, and, you know, what you're hearing, this hype train that this movie has picked up, it's for real, in my opinion. This is a movie people need to go out and see. There's a few warnings, though. I mean, there's foul language, there's drug use and alcohol, there's definitely some nudity. So, you know, if your kids are big Lady Gaga fans and you're not okay with them seeing nudity, maybe they need to wait until they're a little older to see this.
Yeah, stuff. Blake, you just issued a bunch of warnings, but I think you just sold a bunch of tickets, too, by talking about that.
Yeah, well, and again, I mean, like, I walked out of this movie and I was feeling something.
Uh-huh.
That tells you. Like, I mean, this is a movie that if you don't connect while you're watching it, it wasn't a movie you should have gone to see in the first place. But I can't really think of anybody that I talk to on a daily basis who doesn't want to go see this based on the trailer or the music video for the song that'll, you know, Shallow, which will likely be nominated for best song at the Oscars. And if I'm, you know, placing bets, I'd say it's going to win as of right now.
It's always interesting when performers cross over from stage or song to the film. Mm-hmm. And Lady Gaga, obviously a really creative artist, and you know, her music videos alone are theatrical performances and always have been. She's great on stage. How does she come across in this movie?
This is going to be, if you're not familiar with the way that she has transitioned into acting through television, specifically American Horror Story,
mm-hmm.
the charisma factor that makes Gaga special as a performer and an artist, she's sort of reserved at the beginning when you see her in this film, and she starts to grow and blossom into, well, the Gaga that we know and love, you know, I as a fan. But at the same time, the performance, the actual acting performance, it is one of the best performances of the year.
Really?
Regardless, actor or actress, it doesn't matter. I mean, this is one of those things that, you know, we've been hearing, you know, critics are talking about it. It killed at the festival circuit. It was one of those things where it's like, oh, that Lady Gaga movie's really big. You know, noting, by the way, that Bradley Cooper, one of the best actors of his generation, is directing this. He was a co-writer on this. He co-wrote it with the guy that wrote Forrest Gump, Eric Roth. So, I mean, you know, like a lot of stars aligned, not to like just pull a word from the title of the film, but a lot of stars aligned to make this movie happen. I mean, this is the third iteration of this story.
Right.
There was a film in 1954 with James Mason and Judy Garland, and then in 1976 with Chris Christopherson and Barbara Streisand. Streisand gave full blessing. She was kind of present when they filmed parts of this, and she saw dailies and some scene edits that they had put together and was like all about what Gaga was doing. They've made changes to the story. I think from my money, this is probably... because we've talked a lot, John, you and I specifically on this station about how like reboots and remakes are kind of tired and
right.
old, and please give us something new.
Mm-hmm.
This is a story that is kind of special because it can be told through every different, you know, generation of Hollywood or music as they retell it, and they've sort of honed it into this new version. I mean, the music that you're hearing here did not really exist at times in or did not exist at all in the 70s, and it certainly didn't in the 50s. So they've modernized it. And I think that they've done a very good job in, you know, taking someone who is already a superstar, Lady Gaga, but like giving her a chance to sort of tell her story in a way.
That's great.
There's a lot of personal elements to her performance. You can just tell. I mean, if you've ever read an interview about what it was like for her, she gets to show us a little bit of what that was like. But I don't want it to just be all about Gaga, okay? I mean, and she, in any of the press I've seen about this, is very big on this, too. Bradley Cooper's performance is one of the best I've seen this year as well.
Right.
He is not to be undervalued or underrated in this movie. I know that, you know, this movie was supposed to get made in like 2011 with Clint Eastwood directing, and like Beyonce was going to star in it. And that would have been an interesting film. But Cooper somehow, like, that ended up in development hell. And then when he swooped in and they got the funding and Gaga got on board, like, everything just sort of clicked. And I could see this movie getting a lot of nominations come Oscar time.
Well,
I really could. In the big categories, too.
It'll be interesting to see if Cooper gets nominated in multiple categories. And Blake, before we go to commercial break and we move on to the next movie, I do got to say, I've seen Lady Gaga. I've never seen American Horror Story, but I've seen a Lady Gaga documentary, which I did not like, actually, but I could tell she was a good actress in it because she really played for the camera in it, so which is the reason I didn't like it as a documentary, but that's for another day to talk about. All right, Blake, so obviously a recommendation on A Star Is Born, you give everyone, I don't know, Blake, do you do stars? Do you do thumbs up? Do you do ratings? What do you do?
I don't ever really have a rating system. Mm-hmm. What I try to do is just say, look, if you've been listening to me talk about this movie, I think it's pretty much implied that I loved it.
All right.
This is one of my favorite movies of the year. And if I'm going to push people toward quality cinema-going experiences that otherwise they, you know, may not, or they're not, you know, they're not a big trailer watcher, or they don't know, like, A Star Is Born is an incredible film. And you should go out and see it, definitely.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Then we're here about Venom with Blockbuster Blake here on 720 WGN. Lady Gaga's first big hit, Just Dance, bringing us into break. Blockbuster Blake just broke down the movie A Star Is Born. Got good reviews there. And let's turn gears. We don't have too much time to talk about Venom, Blake, but apparently we don't really need to have too much time.
Yeah, sadly we really don't. Venom Venom stars Tom Hardy, and it's actually the comic book film based off the character Venom, which was, you know, a Spider-Man villain to many. It's always been a very big favorite character. It was featured once in Spider-Man 3, directed by Sam Raimi, way back when, and it didn't work then. And I hate to say it because I really wanted this to, but it didn't work for me now. The big thing is, though, that Tom Hardy, I will say, really does try in this movie. It made me laugh several times. And he fits the role, the character, the version of this Eddie Brock that they've created for this film iteration. The problem is, and I've talked about it a lot on WGN, is you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, right? We have all these big films and everything. This particular entry, however, falls under the Sony brand. It doesn't fall under the Disney big Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is an in association with Marvel production, so it's kind of off on its own tangent. And while they tried, the film, I felt, just did not have a declared tone. You know, it started off one way, and then it shifted into this like serious investigative journalist, you know, who is going to get, you know, this unhappy accident, turn him into this superhero, but not really a hero character. But then at the same time, it tried to be really funny, and then by the end of the movie, it declared what its tone was, and then I kind of wanted a whole movie of that, but the movie ended.
Wow.
So it doesn't really click with itself. Despite the fact that there's very talented people involved, I don't know. This movie, I mean, I do know, and this movie just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
So, and I know that a lot of people are saying that, too.
Yeah, so Venom...
I'm curious what a lot of the diehard comic fans think.
A lot of my friends, you know, that we have on Facebook and Twitter are diehard comic fans, and many people not happy with this movie. And I can't believe no one's using the Venom left me looking for the antidote. How about that?
Oh,
see?
I heard somebody call it Nenum.
Yes.
They're just kind of like, didn't really work for him.
All right. Well, so,
can I ask a question?
Oh, Roger. Yeah, sure. You're always welcome.
Because I'm a member of the Mary Marvel Marching Society from way back when.
Mm-hmm.
And so you said it was Sony that produced the Venom movie.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Doesn't Sony have like a horrible track record with Marvel movies?
So, yes and no. For the most part, yes. I would say no, because if we didn't have Spider-Man 1 and 2,
right,
which was under the Sony brand,
okay,
we wouldn't really have all the comic book films we have today.
That's true.
And I'm not going to count the Nolan Batman films. They're in their own
world. Well, that's DC. Yes.
But definitely, I mean, what Sam Raimi did with the first two Spider-Man films kind of set a new standard for how to make comic book films, you know, mm-hmm, in the early 2000s. But from there on, it's been a lot of hit and miss. And the problem is that, you know, when Marvel was, I guess it was, and maybe my history is a bit sketchy here, but I think it was near bankruptcy at one point, so certain properties were sold off to different studios, right?
Exactly.
That's why Fantastic Four has had multiple iterations and mm-hmm, it's never been done right, including but not limited to the no-one-should-have-ever-seen version that was made for Fox. Then you have Spider-Man, which, you know, getting Spider-Man into the Marvel Cinematic Universe was a big amount of doing.
Right.
I don't know how many meetings, but they finally made it work. And Venom is one of the the properties they've held on to. So I think they had to make this movie. I don't know all the story, but I know that, you know, you only get so long to make a movie when you have the rights to the property. And I think they had to make this movie. So, you know, getting a big star like Tom Hardy, Michelle Williams, who, by the way, is fantastic. And so much of this movie I wanted to work, and none of it really did.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
And I think it's because there were probably reshoots. I think that they had a problem with deciding what tone it wanted to take, and then you just ended up getting what you got in the end.
Mm-hmm.
If there would have been some serious creative decisions and then commitments made to those decisions earlier, I think, you know, you would have had a great performance by Tom Hardy that wasn't mired in a mess of a film.
Because
there's some really great Tom Hardy moments here. I was enjoying it, but I wasn't enjoying the overall experience.
Hey, Roger, what was the name of that society you were in?
It's the Mary Marvel Marching Society. You've never heard of that?
No, I'm learning so much about you,
this
though,
was, Roger. Stan Lee, in the early days of the rebirth of Marvel Comics, back in the 60s, did a ton of promotions, and one of them was the Mary Marvel Marching Society, and in the comics, you could cut out the little application tag and fill it out and mail it in, and you got a membership card and some other things, and a certificate, I think. And he always ran contests, but like you, where you were running your contest with Finish the Headlines, but you didn't have a prize.
Right.
Yeah. So Stan Lee popularized that with running contests, or, you know, running like a question in the magazine, and you got the prize was the really big no prize.
Okay.
You know, really big no prize.
Uh-huh.
And that was the joy of reading those comics. It wasn't just the story and the artwork, which was absolutely mind-blowing when you were raised on DC at that time, but was the letters to the editor, the comments from Stan Lee, and just some great stuff in those. So
really cool.
I grew up with those.
Interesting. All right, Blake, you're going to hang on the line. We're going to talk Halloween movies in a bit, okay?
Absolutely.
All right, more with Blockbuster Blake in a second, but it is now 2:34. And Roger, this wasn't my fault either.
It's my fault.
I know.
Two in a row.
Just make sure the bosses know that.
I'm letting them know.
2:34, it's news time. Here's Roger Mattis. 720 WGN, John Hansen in for Matt Bubala on this Saturday morning. And we're talking about movies with Blockbuster Blake. And Blake, it is the season to get a little scared. And man, I'm not much for the jump out slasher films. I know a lot of people love them, especially around Halloween time. So I'd love to get the conversation started about the movies that you all love to watch. It's a guilty pleasure, maybe, or the movie that you just like to that you just like to be scared by or creeped out by. It's a fun feeling to go through. Obviously, it's great in the movie theaters, but maybe at home or whatever. So, Blake Stubbs, why don't you get this conversation started? Oh, by the way, 312-981-7200, text or talk. We want to hear from you guys. Blake, you got any classic favorites that give you the heebie-jeebies?
Oh, do I have classic favorites? Come on, John. Of course. No, for me, a big one that I have to watch every year at this time of year is The Exorcist. I love that film. It's an amazing cinematic experience. Sadly, it's one of the few, you know, classics I haven't seen on a big screen. But I do watch it every year. I do think that it is both scary at times, but also I think it's a great story. I think it's just one of those films that they just got it right when they made it. And it's interesting to, you know, for all the years that I watched it, I find that there's always somebody I know who hasn't seen it. And I love showing it to them and getting their reaction, because the movie still plays. You know, it still plays.
Yeah, that movie, I didn't see it until I was, I think, an adult. It came out in the 70s, obviously. But, man, that movie, it holds up in scariness. You know how when you look back at some movies and they just, you know, you're like, how are people scared of this? And that movie is not one of those. Those are ones that you could show anyone at any time, and it scares the crap out of you.
It does, and it doesn't matter. It's just like it has aged so well, because one, the filmmaking was just outstanding, directed by, you know, William Friedkin. And it was nominated for, you know, multiple. The Academy did acknowledge this film. But the big thing for me, though, too, is that the visuals and the effects and everything was very practical. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the way they captured it, like, you know, the spider walk down the stairs, the rotating head, the vomiting of the pea soup, okay? Like, to just describe them to you, right, there's not much to it. But to watch the film, it hits you. And if you've done that, the movie's going to scare generations. And this movie does. It still does.
If I may interject, yeah. Gentlemen. So I was in my prime high school, college days when this happened. And I'll tell you this. I read the book first. About a year and a half or so before the movie came out, I read William Peter Blatty wrote the book, and I believe wrote the screenplay.
He did. He won the Oscar for it,
too. Yes. The book, I could not put it down. It was riveting. I think I read that book faster than I've ever read a book in my life. The problem was, when the movie came out, and having been a radio TV major at the time and knowing about filmmaking and stuff like that, while everybody else in the theater was jumping out of their seats and squeamishly screaming and everything, I'm sitting over in the corner with my box of popcorn laughing my freaking head off because I knew how all the effects were being done, and I thought it was hilarious. Compared to the book, it didn't, for me, it was ruined. The book ruined it.
Hmm. Hey, Blake.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't mean to interrupt this love affair between you two, but we do have a caller from Bill in Des Plaines. Bill, you got a comment. Did I just hang up on Blake, Jess? I think I did. Well, Bill, go ahead and give your... Bill, you go ahead, and we'll fill Blake in exactly on what you're going to talk about.
Okay, I just wanted to say maybe he's aware of it, but... The scary movies, they often have a different, like a clip at the beginning, I don't know, 5-10 minutes long or something, that's not necessarily related to the movie. And like there's Dr. Phil and Shaquille O'Neal at the beginning of one of them, that from one of the Saw movies. But anyway, I don't know which one of them it is, the second or the third, I think. But it's got James Woods as the star, and it's a parody of The Exorcist, and it is hilarious.
So it plays in front of a different movie?
In front of one of the scary movies. I think it's two or three, but I don't know. You'd have to look at any one of them that's got James Woods in it. That's the one. But it's also got the sidekick. I can't think of his name from Conan or from Conan O'Brien.
Andy Richter. Andy Richter.
That's it. Yeah, he's also in it as a priest. And I don't know. There's not a lot of stuff, but if you like The Exorcist, I mean, this is worth seeing.
All right. Well, I'm gonna.
It's sort of like if you like The Lord of the Rings, you got to read Lord of the Rings too, just the heck of it. Even though it's 98 pages, but whatever.
All right. Yeah. Well, I got Blake on the line. Blake, have you heard of a Exorcist parody? Bill was just calling about it. It ran before one of the scary movies. Have you seen it?
Yes, I did see it, and it is Andy Richter, isn't it? And Andy Richter. I love Andy Richter.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
Right.
It was in Scary Movie 2, I believe. And it definitely, they go over everything that, you know, makes The Exorcist work. They just go overboard to excess. And it's funny.
Yeah.
I gotta give some credit to it. I mean, I vividly remember it. So right. There you go.
Okay. So you guys went with Exorcist, which is, I'd say that's a, you know, it's not the pop out slasher film. Of course, it's well more executed than that. I'm going to go in the direction, the movie that I like to watch when I really want to be creeped out. And this is just me. I don't like the slashers or anything like that. I don't like pop. I watch movies, scary movies, with my hands over my eyes still. I cannot watch them. I don't like the pop out. But my favorite is Silence of the Lambs. Any serial murderer movie is right up my alley. And there is enough of that pop out, especially at the end of Silence of the Lambs, that, mm-hmm. that gives that such a suspense to it. But just that psychological, slow-moving thriller, that is my kind of, you know, exploring that sort of genre. Blake, I don't know. I mean, Silence of the Lambs obviously holds up. It's just an incredible film. Won the big five categories for Oscar, of course. But, man, that movie is just so well put together.
It really is. It's it is a masterclass, I think, in what I would call horror thriller or horror suspense filmmaking. And I'm not the only person to call it that, but that's really what it is. I mean, like you said, it's not a slasher. It's not going for cheap scares.
It's not a Halloween theme movie by any stretch of the imagination, but no. it in October on a dark night, that's what I would watch.
And I think that this was a movie that the acting alone, you know, the script is very well put together, but the acting is what has always drawn people in. I mean, Anthony Hopkins is Hannibal Lecter alone, but Jodie Foster, Ted Levine, by the way, the actor who plays Buffalo Bill in that film, pretty much, and I remember reading an interview with him about this, like, it was a great performance, but it hurt his career.
Oh, for sure.
Because he was so convincingly scary. And he had sort of done such a good job that it caused harm to a person who wanted to be a working actor and work and act in all kinds of different things. It was very hard for him to find work after this. And so, you know, that alone, you know, the performance of the villain, one of the villains, is so good that it you know, kind of tainted his career for a little while there. Definitely a movie that if you have not seen it, you need to watch it, and there is no better time than to watch it at this time of year.
Editing of the end of that movie, and which I know that originally they weren't going to edit it that way, where there's the reveal. I don't want to do spoiler alert, but it came out in 1991, so people go out and see it. But the fact that Jodie Foster, her character, Agent Starling, was not where we all thought she was, is one of the most dramatic and well put together pieces of editing that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I was going to say there's, I'm sure there have been, you know, video essays. I don't know if people know that this is a thing, but if you go on YouTube, you know, when there's a great scene, whether it be due to screenplay or editing or cinematography, there's a lot of great video essays out there. And if there isn't one on the final sequence of Silence of the Lambs, somebody out there is going to listen to this and they're going to make one. Because you're absolutely correct. It is truly a great suspense sequence
that
has you on the edge of your seat.
When that door opens, and you think, and then they do the slow zoom of the character, I forget his name, her boss, realizing that they're in the wrong place and where she is going to be harmful. And then the editing, that edit between the two houses is incredible. But then that the editing the keeps up, the storytelling through the labyrinth of Buffalo Bill's house, how the upstairs transitions to the downstairs, and then obviously the in the dark, and then the green light of the infrared or the night vision goggles. Just is so so I'll watch that movie by myself. Until the last scene. Until Buffalo Bill opens that door, if I'm alone, I will turn the movie off. I cannot watch.
What?
I can't watch it. I can't watch the end of that movie. Alone.
You've watched the whole movie.
Many, many times. I've seen it.
Well, I know, but you've been with other people.
Yes. Okay. I can't watch that alone. I really can't, especially when the gun is drawn and we see it through the night. And apologies, spoilers, go see Silence of the Lambs. But then when the gun is drawn, you know, and it's facing her head, it is just so well conceived and storyboarded and executed to perfection. It's so incredible. It's a really great payoff on a, you know, for a movie that kind of trudges along slowly and it ramps up with momentum. Man, you get a good bang at the end, and that really just kind of sells the whole thing for me.
Yeah, I sometimes, you know, I developed this idea in college, imagine that. But I always try to describe some films as different types of, taking different types of drinks. You know, some, they have to be quick shots, right? But some you got to savor. Silence of the Lambs is one that you got to savor. You really have to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a nice whiskey, but then it has a really, it's like with a shot of tequila right at the end of it. You know, like that's what like you swirl the glass around, you got the ice, you like the clink of the ice, maybe one ice cube and a nice Maker's, take a couple sips of a Knob Creek, and then bam, here comes some Cuervo down your throat. I don't know. That's what that movie feels like to me.
No, it definitely is. And I think that's one of those, and that's another movie that, you know, I mean, if we're just going to sit here and name some classics, that's fine with me, but this one holds up still as well.
Yeah.
And it definitely, that unveiling, the thing that you're talking about, and people who have seen it, they know. But people who haven't are like, wait, what are
If you have not seen it, you have to go see it. Hey, Blake, we got to take a quick commercial break. 312-91-7200. I want to hear from all you out there. What's that one movie? movie, man, you just love to watch to get scared or make your skin crawl on 720 WGN. It's October, which means it's time for Monster Mash and scary movies, and we're chatting with Blockbuster Blake. And Blake, you know that means it's Halloween time when you hear that song, and we're talking about thrillers, and Roger actually has a little quiz for you, Blake, if you're okay with that.
I'm okay, as long as everyone's okay with me probably getting it all wrong.
Go ahead, Roger. What all do you right. got for
well,
us?
Well, Blake, this is a theme song to a movie that I saw in the theater. And I actually, when I was in charge of films for our housing area at SIU Carbondale, I made a point around Halloween time to show this in the cafeteria. So imagine a huge screen at one end of this large cafeteria and about maybe 300 students who at one point in the movie jump about 5 feet out of their chairs simultaneously and then fall back down. That's the one scary spot in this psychological thriller. And let's see if you can tell what it is by this theme song. It does sound spooky.
It does.
It's a psychological thriller.
Yeah.
So there was one movie. Okay. There was a movie I was going to bring up, and I don't. I'm probably wrong.
Okay.
But for me, it's between two films. Because I'm sketchy on the scores for the films, and I'm probably wrong. But for me, it's either The Omen or something like Rosemary's Baby.
Ooh. Close.
Because they're not horror movies.
They're
psychological thrillers.
Right.
And yeah, but I'm probably wrong. So
well, I've got a text. I got a text, Roger.
Oh.
I don't know if this is an answer to this thing. Was it Wait Until Dark?
Bingo.
Ah, the text from the 312.
Oh.
Bingo.
Wait Until Dark.
And that theme song was written and composed by Henry Mancini.
Mancini, yeah.
This is a classic one-point scare-your-pants-off type of movie. In other words, it's not all blood and guts.
Wait, is this the Audrey Hepburn movie?
Yes.
Ah.
You know what I'm talking about,
then,
right?
Now. Yes, I do.
Yeah. This, I saw this, and I jumped when I saw it in the theater because I had no clue what to expect. I thought it was kind of like a murder mystery, kind of detective kind of thing. And when this one scene, which I'm not giving away.
Spoiler alert, 1967.
I am not kidding. I showed this to about 300 students who had no clue what this movie was. And they were all watching it, and it had big names in it. And it got to that one point, I'm not kidding. I'm sitting in the back by the projector, laughing and giggling like a little boy when they all jumped. I'm not kidding. So if anyone has not seen this movie, you need to see it and uninterrupted. No pausing it to go get food or answer the phone or anything. You have to sit, get comfortable, turn the lights down low, and watch this.
And just to make sure you don't jump off the floor, make sure you grab your ankles.
Yeah, that too.
I will also throw in, because, and this is why I think I definitely know the story and I know it very well. I just didn't know the scene, because my first introduction to this is actually the stage play of the same name.
Ah, yes.
This is a film that translates very well to the stage, and you can get the same reaction out of a live audience if they don't know what's going to happen.
Exactly. Oh, it's perfect for the stage.
And it's more gasped when they see it live.
Yeah.
As opposed to like a jumping scream or whatever. But I mean, yeah. I've seen an audience. I've seen a couple people do that. So, Roger, you brought a gem to this.
Well,
because it's not the type of movie that everybody's going to pick in October.
Right.
Because they think Halloween. Mm-hmm. But this is a true psychological thriller that has both adapted itself to the stage very well.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, Henry Mancini, I mean, come on, I should have known that. I'm going to
Well, it's a little out of his, you know, he's known for more light comedic type themes and to movies.
Correct.
And this was completely out of anyone's realm of understanding of what he was capable of.
Not only that, Hepburn right. got nominated for an Academy Award for this film
really?
As well. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I did not know that.
I'm curious if in the annals of Hollywood history, if Mancini's involvement of this film didn't stem from her working with him on Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh, right, Ooh. Maybe.
Because he wrote Moon River for her on that film. And so I think they were friends. And I wouldn't be surprised if this was a, you know, get out of your comfort zone mm-hmm. and come try something new. Because that happens.
Come on.
We all know that we all know some story where, you know, people kind of in Hollywood have sort of worked on something because of someone they know. Otherwise, how would anything ever get done? Yeah. And, but I mean, look, this is a movie people shouldn't miss. Audrey Hepburn, Alan Arkin, Richard Crenna, Jack Weston. This is a huge cast. I mean, it's not a big cast in terms of numbers, but like big names, you know, definitely.
Hey, not to keep on interrupting the Roger Blake Love Fest, but we're going to do that because it is 3 o'clock. But Blake, we normally slot you for the hour. You don't mind sticking around a little bit longer, though, do you?
I'm all yours.
312-981-7200. Want you to join the conversation if you've got a scary movie, a favorite one, whether it's a slasher, a psychological thriller, or just something weird and quirky. 312-981-7200. It's, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. It's dark outside. It's spooky out in Chicago with the clouds and the rain. It's really set up for us to talk about some scary movies. Speaking of scary, you heard the laugh right there. The stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Got to read this first, too. Hear the sounds that matter. The top five at five from the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantes. Weekday afternoons on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is 3 o'clock, 301. Here's Roger Bannon. Obviously a Christmas movie, but referencing Halloween Town, The Nightmare Before Christmas. That's an incredible film. And joining us here on the line is Blockbuster Blake. Oh, Blake, I love The Nightmare Before Christmas, but a good Halloween flick, too, as it turns out. We're talking about movies that scare you, that freak you out, psychological thrillers, just movies that you love to watch on a dark and stormy night, as tonight is as well. Blake, we've talked about Wait Until Dark. We talked about Silence of the Lambs, The Exorcist. You mind if we take a few phone calls, Blake?
Absolutely.
312-981-7200. Talk or text if you've got something. Let's go to Kelly. Kelly, you're on the line here on 720 WGN.
Hello.
Kelly, what's your movie that just makes your skin crawl?
Well, I'm not a big horror film buff, but there's a movie called Bone Tomahawk.
Bone Tomahawk.
Yep, starring Kurt Russell. And it's a Western, but it's a suspense thriller. Gory kind of movie,
and it really creeps
me out. Yeah,
Blake, have you seen Bone Tomahawk?
I'm very familiar with Bone Tomahawk. This was a movie that came out around the time The Hateful Eight did. It was like right before Kurt Russell shaved that massive cookie duster that he had, or soup catcher, I guess as well. But he plays this aging sheriff. Who gets recruited to go find this woman who's been abducted, but she's been abducted by cannibals or something that, you know, people from the Old West have never encountered.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a group of guys that are heading out with him, and it's a pretty big cast. I mean, it's Patrick Wilson, Matthew Fox, Richard Jenkins. I mean, David Arquette is in this movie, Sid Haig, like, it's got a nice cast. It was a more on the independent film side, but the grit, you know, that gore that we're talking about, it's present. It's got some suspense. It's got some scary action, and I say scary action because it's very violent in the fighting that goes on in the film. And it's a Western that if people have seen it, they will have to talk about it. If they haven't seen it, they're like, wait, what is this?
And I never
show someone a trailer, I'm going to be intrigued.
I had to Google it. I didn't know it. Kelly, where are you calling from this evening or morning?
Chillicothe, Ohio. I'm on my way home from work, so you're keeping me awake.
Oh, we appreciate that, Kelly. Enjoy Chillicothe, Ohio, and thanks for the phone call, okay?
All right, thank you.
720 WGN. Give us a phone call at 312-981-7200 if you'd like to join the conversation about scary movies. Blake, we got a couple texters coming in.
Okay.
Squat texts in. He wants to know, I assume Squat would be a man. I don't know. Perhaps, probably. Would Blowout be considered a psychological thriller or good for Halloween?
You know, I'm going to say that we can classify that one as a thriller, but we should also classify it as one of my absolute favorite films.
Really?
That is a good pull. Thank you. Yes.
Is that John Travolta?
John Travolta. It's directed by Brian De Palma. And I think it's probably, I mean, Brian De Palma's made some really good movies, okay? He's also made some movies that people didn't really love, but I think this one is probably my favorite De Palma movie because it's about a guy who's a sound editor. He's a sound editor for the adult film industry.
Oh, okay. Fun job.
And it's John Travolta, played by John Travolta. And one night he's out, he's capturing Foley sound, and Foley sound is going out and actually capturing natural sound or manufacturing the sound and making sure you can put it into the movie. But he's just out capturing natural sound and, you know, he's just taking a walk, right? All of a sudden there's a car crash and someone almost dies in that car crash, and he helps her. But then there's way more to this than meets the eye, but also the ears. And so the movie Blowout is the type of movie that if you've met somebody who's seen it, they're going to be probably talking about it with as much emphasis as I am about how cool the movie is and how well it's put together. It's a movie that embraces brilliant filmmaking, in my opinion, because of the use of sound, because of the suspense and the thrill. John Lithgow's in this movie. Nancy Allen is in this movie. I know what I'm watching tomorrow or on Sunday night when I get back from St. Louis, because I'm going to the Hawks game tomorrow. But when I get back Sunday night, I know what I'm watching. Thank you for that text message. Blowout. Definite must.
Just Squad also wants to know, do you think that Play Misty for Me holds up today?
Play Misty for Me? Yeah, I mean, I'm one who, I think I saw that movie when I was in college,
yeah.
and I enjoyed it. I haven't seen it since, but it's one that I'm sure if I watched it again now and it was more fresh in my mind, I would probably argue that it does hold up pretty well. Although, you know, when you watch these movies that were made in the 60s and the 70s that are really good, you know, for instance, or enjoyable, there's always something in there that you're like, ooh, that doesn't hold up right now.
Right.
That doesn't hold up right now. And you can pick it apart based on that, but I would say that, yeah, Play Misty for Me is that's a good pick, too. Yeah.
We got a text.
I think we'd just be getting a bunch of hocus pocus. And like,
No. You know our listeners. No.
You know what really makes that movie?
No. What's that?
Great.
Is Roberta Flack.
Yes.
First time ever I saw your face was a huge part of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
We got another text. The movie Squirm. Blake, do you know?
I've never seen it.
Never seen it. Okay, that's like one of the first times.
I've never seen it.
I'm looking it up right now. It looks like a 1976 horror slash natural horror film, which I don't know what that means. Not a great IMDb rating. Directed by Jeff Lieberman. I don't know if that rings a bell. Music by Robert Prince. Don Scardino is in it. I don't know if that. It's about a city slicker making his way to the swampy little town of Fly Creek, Georgia, to see his girlfriend, played by Patricia Percy. After meeting up with her, he learns the area has recently been ravaged by intense storms. More troubling is the appearance of large worms driven up through the soil by the downpours. But Mick and the locals don't realize that the electricity from down power lines has caused the worms to go mad and develop a taste for human flesh. Not a kind of movie I think I would enjoy. It's not up my alley, but some people love those flicks, Blake.
I'm going to say challenge accepted on this one. This is my homework. Somebody was going to bring something up I've never heard of, and I've never heard of this,
right.
But she got me hooked. Looking at these pictures from
production, right?
Yeah, I'm in. Sign me up.
By the way, go watch this. You mentioned it in the 319 text in Michael out in Iowa. Thanks for listening, Michael. Not into scary movies, kind of like myself. One movie I watch every Halloween, Hocus Pocus, of course.
Hocus Pocus.
Gotta watch Hocus Pocus. It's so good.
It is so good, and it's you know, I was the core demographic for that movie. I was a kid when it came out. I was totally into it. It was very Halloween. It was very fun. I still love it. I could watch it, you know, every year at least once. Apparently, the station Freeform is playing it a lot this month. So plenty of chances. Of course, you know, movie nerds like myself, I own a copy, but and I'm not letting anyone borrow it.
Right.
But Hocus Pocus is a definite must. And I honestly, like, I didn't mean to infer that the listeners aren't going to bring out the big guns and bring out the good stuff. It's just, you know, around this time of year, there's the big ones. There's Nightmare Before Christmas, which we've already mentioned. Something like The Shining, which is a great movie, and definitely scares people.
Hey, we got a question from the 708. The color remake of the original Psycho, they wanted to know if you've seen it. Sky Cap Dan wanted to know.
I have seen it. It stars Vince Vaughn. Anne Heche is in it. I believe Julianne Moore as well. I might be wrong on that. But I got to be honest with you. I don't really remember enjoying it all that much, but that's just because I'm a Hitchcock faithful. I think it was a shot-for-shot remake done at a time when they were trying to tell these stories again. Before the run of remakes, you know, this topic that we've talked about before, I think Vince Vaughn gives a good performance in it.
Yeah.
I think that there's good elements in it. I just think that the overall movie, I mean, it's a Gus Van Sant film. I had to look up who directed it. And it's not typical Gus Van Sant, but there's definitely hints of Van Zandt in it when you watch it.
Yeah.
So it's a more commercial Van Zandt film. I don't know. I just wasn't. It didn't click for me. Easiest way to say it.
We had a caller didn't want to come on air, but wanted your thoughts on Last House on the Left.
Which version?
Oh, well, I don't know. The caller's already gone, Blake. So I know there's been a couple of them.
I'm a fan of the 72 version. I'm not the biggest fan of the latest version, which I looked it up, 2009. The latest version has a pretty crazy violent end to it, much like, you know, the other film, which is, I feel like the original film played more to the psychological thriller element than the modern one did. The modern one got a little too trying to please with big antics, whereas the charm for me, the cult following that I have, that I joined in with on The Last House on the Left from 72, I enjoyed more.
All right.
So, I mean, if we're talking about both, you know, I got to delineate between the two.
773 chimes in on the text line. Have you ever seen the sci-fi thriller The Power with George Hamilton? That's from the 773, the sci-fi thriller The Power.
No. I have not.
All right.
The Power?
Yeah, you're going to have some.
George Hamilton?
Yeah.
Okay, making notes. I'm making notes, no, everybody. Squirm and The Power. All right.
What about
the Power of Squirm?
The Power and Squirm. If someone found that list and it was not titled with what you're going to do, I don't know if you'd probably get a call from someone else. Okay, 630 chimes in Evil Dead 2, Original Dawn of the Dead, course. High Tension, yeah. Wolf Creek 1 and 2. That's Chris and Elk Grove.
I enjoy all Wolf Creek 1. I've never seen Wolf Creek 2. High Tension, I thought, was great. I thought that the overall, like, if I would have read the screenplay, I would have loved it. I thought the execution of the twist at the end could have been played a little bit better, but the overall movie, I really enjoyed. And Evil Dead 2, please. That movie's so brilliant. It's not even funny. That is one of my favorite movies, and I do watch the Evil Dead films around this time of year. Army of Darkness, which is the third film in that series, is the movie a lot of people easily relate to, but Evil Dead 2, oh man, if you want to see what independent spirit behind filmmaking is and just making it your own way, watch Sam Raimi's Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
That is a great entry.
Hey, good, we got a
selection.
We got another phone call for you. Adam out in Rockford, you got a question for Blockbuster Blake about a scary movie or a movie to see if he's seen it?
Yeah, and I actually had I'm sitting here on the line. God, there are so many, but I'll just rattle off a couple. There's a movie called Pi, where it's like the mathematical symbol for Pi. More of a suspense thriller type movie about a guy who's like a brilliant mathematician, and you know, is obviously going through some, you know, I don't know, some bad stuff mentally all of the time, and kind of encounters all these people that are trying to get to whatever secret he seems to be prying at, and in the end he ends up taking a drill to his head. But
spoiler alert.
I'm sorry, I didn't drop that. And very quickly, also, just in the same vein, I guess a little bit, The Machinist, I think, as a movie, Christian Bale movie, very, very good movie for what it's trying to be. And I just wanted to throw it out there really, really quickly. The scariest zombie movie, or like the scariest idea of a zombie movie to me, was always, what if zombies could move, you know, at the speeds that humans can move at? And when I saw 28 Weeks Later, or is it 28 Days Later, 28 Weeks Later, and you see the zombies in that movie running around, and I mean, that is the kind of stuff that keeps me up at night. Ooh. But thanks for having me on, Beth.
And I'm glad it keeps you up at night, because you can call in from Rockford, Adam. We appreciate the phone call. Blake, your thoughts on some of the films Adam listed off?
I'm a fan of all three. Well, four, technically, because he mentioned the 28, both films from the 28 Days, 28 Weeks. Pi, oddly enough, little piece of trivia, it was Darren Aronofsky's first big film. It was the film that put him on the map. He's gone on to make The Wrestler. Most recently, Mother was the movie that came out for him. But it was also shot by Matthew Libatique, the guy I mentioned earlier, who shot both of the films that I reviewed earlier in this broadcast. The Machinist, Christian Bale, what a performance. What's crazy is that as soon as he finished making that movie, he put on all the weight to play Bruce Wayne in Batman Begins. So he read up on the weight loss and then the weight gain after. It's incredible what he did for those two roles. And the performance in The Machinist is excellent. I mean, it is a thriller because of what it does to your senses as a viewer, in a big way.
All right, Blake.
I'm a big fan of all his picks.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, but the text line is lighting up. I got some more for you after the break. 312-981-7200. If you want to join the conversation on that one movie that's just really scares you, that maybe some other people haven't heard of, that they can add to their Halloween list. More coming up on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. John Hansen with Blake Stubbs on the line, and I can hear him furiously typing away as we look. Yeah, clickety-clack as we're looking up some movies. We've got some great texts, and we really appreciate it. We're talking about the scary and creepy movies out there that really make your skin crawl. Let's go to one or two more texts, and I've got a phone call as well. What do you think about Babadook? We got a text from the 219.
Babadook is one of those movies that I remember when it came out, I was like, this? And then, of course, people started seeing it, and they're like, Babadook. Like, it had a little phenomenon when it came out. And I think it's in that, you know, modern, and when I say modern, I mean like last 10 years, must-see lists. And it's one of those things where, like, I know people who don't like it, and I know people who do, but it built a very big following. It's one of those modern, like, really recent modern, like, cult classics, I think. So that one's I can see why people would want to watch it around this time of year.
Someone texted in with a 1962 thriller, Experiment in Terror, which I've never heard of. I don't know if you've heard of that movie, Blake. Ross Martin and Lee Remick. I mean, you're getting a lot of homework here.
Lee Remick's in it, okay.
And Glenn Ford. I don't know if that rings a bell, but the movie poster looks really cool from what I found by Google.
It does look really cool.
So Experiment in Terror, you'll have to add that to the list, okay?
Adding it to the list.
All right. Yeah. We got a thriller with Donald Sutherland. This comes from Mike in Ravenswood on the Northwest Side. Eye of the Needle. Have you heard of Eye of the Needle?
I've never seen Eye of the Needle, no.
Okay.
No, I've heard the title, but I've never seen the film. I'm adding it to the list.
And Donald Sutherland's great.
The best thing for me is just come on WGN, talk about things I love, and then people throw things at me that they love that I've never seen, and then I have a new list of homework that I get to go and watch and enjoy. So it's the best. Best trade-off, right?
It's really a love fest. Okay, we're going to go to a phone call here, and we've got Lulu. Lulu, you're on 720 WGN. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, hi. Listen, I want to throw three out there.
Okay.
I don't believe they've been mentioned, and I can never say it right. Amityville Horror?
Yeah, Amityville Horror, supposedly based on the true story, but that's been somewhat debunked. You said you had a couple others that you wanted to throw out there, too,
yes,
Lulu.
Carrie, the original Carrie. And then... There was a Stephen King, and I don't believe it was a movie. I think it was made for television, like a two-night series or something, called Needful Things.
Are you Needful familiar Things? With that? Yes. I am. Yeah, Needful Things. Is one of those movies that has some serious violence in it that I remember shocked me as a kid. There's Needful Things is very interesting. Basically, the devil comes to town, and he is willing to offer up what people want, but there are costs.
Does he come into town like Harold Hill? Like, what do you mean the devil comes to town? He just comes in on a train, or?
Well, it's implied that there's more to this man than meets the eye. There's evil dealings going on, quite nefarious.
I think he's a new shopkeeper in town.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I think that's how he comes to town.
Well, maybe he's just trying to run an honest-to-God business in town, and,
I don't think so. Sorry, but thank you.
Hey, Lulu, we appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for joining us here on WGN. I like that she had a couple classics too, which we've been really good, kind of off the beaten path. We don't have to dive into Carrie or Amityville, but they're great thrillers, of course. You know what, Blake? I wanted to mention one. I can't think of the name of it now. Of course, it is this movie freaked me out as a young adult. I guess you could say, or a teenager. It's got Denzel in it, I believe. So is it Fallen, where the spirit travels between the people? And I think I watched it recently, and it didn't quite scare me as much as it did. But when I was a teenager, man, seeing that time is on my side, and that's a really well put. I thought, at least when I was younger, that movie scared me like none other.
I was going to say it's interesting to watch movies when you're younger. You know, for instance, Carrie is also a film that scared me to no end, and it wasn't really the movie; it was the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. I remember having nightmares about the end of that movie, and now I watch it and I'm like, man, what a really well put together movie.
Right.
It doesn't scare me anymore.
Right?
You know, I just like it doesn't. I know what's going to happen. I got over whatever it was that, you know, the nightmares. That's not an issue anymore. But the also directed by Brian De Palma, and it was written by Stephen King, based off of a novella he wrote, I believe.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
those are all good picks.
Yeah. So I was going to say, the last one I have for you, I think it's going to be homework before we got a break and go to news.
All right.
I don't know. Maybe you've seen it. This is from the early 60s. Texter from the 224 chimes in with Premature Burial with Ray Milland, scariest ever. Says the 224. So,
scariest ever? Well, it's going on the list. I'm sorry I've not seen this, but I'm intrigued. It's a Corman movie. I'm in.
All right.
I'm in. Roger Corman directed it. I'm all in.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, Blake, we've given you some homework. You've given a lot of us some homework, too. Thanks for spending 90 minutes with us here on WGN, Blake.
Well, you know, you get John and Blake together, you throw in a little Roger Badish, it's bound to happen.
It certainly is. All right, Blake,
Nature
take care. And hey, obviously the Hawks are on later tonight on WGN, and you'll be there in St. Louis.
I will be there causing trouble, and I guess they call themselves the River City. I'm from Peoria, also the River City, but... get ready. Trouble's coming to the River City. I'll be there.
Go.
Cheering on the Hawks.
Go Hawks, man. All right, Blake, take it easy, man.
Thank you, everybody.
Quick commercial break, then news on 720 WGN.